Section of 10420, Rule 33.
Colonel W.I. Watson, Reel 33. You were telling me about the breakthrough, Colonel. What happened next?
Yes. Well, we did, as I think I said, 35 miles on a bearing of 190 degrees. And we were to do 30 miles, and I thought we'd go on five more to make absolutely doubly sure that we were well clear of the German lines. And indeed we were when... It was a chilly night, as the desert nights are always are. When dawn broke, we stopped and we found that it was pure desert. There wasn't a sign of enemy opposition or enemy occupation anywhere. In fact, I saw some gazelle feeding on the camel scrub. So we knew we were well clear of the Germans, but I'd lost the greater part of my column, but I'd collected a lot more of, you might say, odds and sods that joined on. But Butler, who had been acting as the intelligence officer for me, was completely exhausted. I mean, he'd been right through all this, looking at his compass and keeping us on the bearing of 190 degrees, and he just collapsed in the bottom of the truck. So Sergeant Thompson, who was a splendid fellow, he was one of the Scottish draft originally, and he took over, and everything was absolutely peaceful and quiet, and we halted, I think, for an hour or so, perhaps, I'm not sure, but we halted for a while, so that everybody could rest a bit. And we then turned due eastwards to get back miles below Bir Hakeim and below the Gazala line, so we could get to the Egyptian frontier. And we were to aim for Fort Mad frontier, which was merely just a gap in the wire. And we then set off in that direction, untrammeled by any enemy or friend or foe. And we stopped at 11:30 in the morning for an hour so the chaps could have a rest and have a sack ration.
Could you light fires?
Oh, yes, you could if you wanted to. But you just had bouillon biscuits, really. It was frightfully hot. I remember quite well lying down in the shade of my truck on the desert, but to try and catch the little tiny bit of breeze that blew under your vehicle. And it was cooler than if you were in the sun. And I remember too drinking a tin of fruit. I had a tin of fruit in my truck, and I ate that and drank the juice out of it. And as dusk was, we set off again, and then as dusk was coming on, we met a whole lot of 12th Lancers in their armoured cars acting as a sort of outpost round Fort Madalena. By now I'd got all sorts of people tacked on. I can't remember whether there were any carriers, but we could see in the distance, miles away in the distance, obviously the vehicles being burnt and being set alight to, and you could just to say see the signs of Bir Hakeim burning, things were burning in the area of Bir Hakeim. And then we arrived half a mile south of Fort Madalena, which I thought was really incredibly accurate on the part of Sergeant Thompson getting us there. And I know that the other people who joined me thought it was absolutely wonderful that we'd saved them and got them back to the Egyptian frontier. We camped for the night, where we could light fires and a meal, and we just slept. I think we were short of Fort Madalena. I don't think we'd got there, but we could see it. And next morning we started off before breakfast at 6 o'clock in the morning. We were up and we drove up to the wire, of cool driving in the morning. That's really what we wanted. And within a mile of getting the other side of the frontier, I found the rest of my column. They'd been running parallel to me, and I found the rest of my column under Erdley Wilmot. We all had... there was some of divisional headquarters there too. We all had breakfast. And then we travelled on to Bertolata, and there I joined up with the CO's column. And next day, the 18th, Major Ferenczi's party came in, and we had a full church service all together. There was no fear of the being frightened by the enemy, Air Force. We had the church service, and our padre gave a thanksgiving for our being safely rescued, you might say. And we were all safe and sound.
Have you any recall of what the losses were in the end, how many you had lost?
No, I can't remember, really, because, you see, the B echelon all had to come out the other way along the coast. But it was an ordeal. We'll go on then a little bit further. On the 19th of June, we were all safe and sound in Egypt. And I had a fearful abscess in my backside. And it had been made worse by this terrible journey. I was feeling absolutely rotten and in a certain amount of pain. And I went to my good friend David Joy, the MO, and he pulled a very grim face. And I felt, as I say, very rotten and very sore. So he sent me to what was left of the field ambulance to come out with me. I think I'd brought out half, most of it. And they pulled a grim face. And I was then sent, all in the day, of course, to a surgical team, which was there and would, in normal course of events, come where the battle was worse. It was entirely on its own, and it consisted of two surgeons and an anaesthetist, two very high-class surgeons, mark you, and they worked from a three-tonner with a canvas tintage all the way around it. And David Joy came with me, and I think one of my old platoon commanders, old David Rome, came too. And certainly my batman, and certainly my good driver, Parkinson. And I went into the hospital, just in my uniform, boots and all. And they said, jump up there. And I jumped up onto the operating table, and the anaesthetist was called in. And they said they were going to cut it open. And he said, count 30. I managed to get to 35, and then I was out. And they duly operated on me. And next I found myself lying on a stretcher. I think I was conscious then, and they told me to get onto the stretcher in the tentage. And I know I came round just as if I'd had the most glorious blind with no hangover. However, to cut the whole story short, I was sent to an advanced dressing station and then eventually put on a hospital train and sent to the 27th General Hospital down at Tel El Kebir on the canal, well, close to where we'd first set foot in Egypt. And there I was from this happened on the 19th of June, and I was discharged on the 1st of July. And I was told I could have 5 days leave, but I wouldn't be popular, as no movement was allowed in Cairo. There was a curfew, and there was a complete flap in Cairo, because during that interval, whilst I'd been in the hospital, there'd been this fearful fighting at Mirza Matruh, which I'd missed, and the battalion now was back at Mariupolis, 19 miles outside Alexandria, or 15 miles outside Alexandria. So I never got the 5 days leave. I went straight to the infantry base depot, where I found the commandant was Victor Yates, my old CO, from Cyprus days. He'd left us in Cyprus. And also, one of the company commanders of the IBD was Hugh Vaux, who'd been our adjutant in 1938. And I did, in fact, share a tent with him. And we lived in luxury, as it were, because we lived in the guards' mess. But I wasn't there for very long. I was only there comparatively a few days, and I started then the journey back, as I say, to Mariupolis. The battalion had suffered fearful casualties, and it was piecing itself together at Mariupolis, and there were the usual afternoon sandstorms. It was a camp, I think, that had been condemned at one time. There was only one company had Brens. I think there were a few carriers, and there were only two companies left in the battalion. There were a couple of mortars and one anti-tank gun. But daily there were improvements. Stores came up, and things began to get better. Crasher Nichols, our brigadier, had been promoted to divisional commander, and Joss Percy, who had started as the CO of the 9th Battalion, was now the brigadier. And there was a general cleaning up going on and inspections. Now, the mess was in a dreadful little hut. It was whitewashed inside. And I decided I would draw some panels on it in chalks, colored chalks, panels of scenes of England. I know I did a lake with a heron sitting in one corner and some wild duck. I knew I did a grouse moor with some grouse flying over it. And I did them in chalk, a box of chalks which had been given to me by Murray Grant, the DAA QMG, at division headquarters before he left the division to go and join the 51st Highland Division. And those chalks I've still got, and they're in one of my drawers to this day, rather worn out because I had used such a lot of them on the walls of this officer's mess at Mariupolis. Now, there was a young officer there who'd been, where he came from and where he went to, I have no idea, but he was in fact called Harker, and he was a cousin of Gordon Harker, the film star, and he was a most amusing chap, and he improved the mess no end. And he, I always remember, told me that that at Pentecost, when at the Passover time, all his friends and relatives all prayed that they might one day get to their holy land of Israel. But as he said, they'd no ever intention of doing so, because they were far happier in England than they'd ever been in Israel. But I can never remember what happened to Harker. But he was really was a very go-ahead chap, rather like his forebear, his uncle, or it was Gordon Harker, of the stage fame, film fame. Well, that got us into July, and there were a lot of inspections. I know on one occasion we had the divisional commander and the brigadier almost one day after another. But on one occasion, I went down with the CO in the 1500 weight to have a bathe, because we were quite close to the sea. And I was sitting aloft. The cab was off, of course. And I was sitting on a seat, aloft, rather, to see if there were any enemy aircraft were to come over. And we were bumping along in the soft sand down to the beach, and I took a header, and for a moment I hung upside down with my head down by the door of the truck and my legs up in the air like that. And I balanced momentarily like that for a while, and then I fell, catching my leg here, on the, just above the knee here on the side, on my driver's rifle, the foresight of my driver's rifle, which was in standing up in a rack. And I split my leg open, and to this day I've got the white scar. The good old David Joyce said I ought to have had it stitched, but I didn't. I went straight and bathed, and it seemed to put, the salt water seemed to put it right. But the white scar is still here. The whole of the time there, we were piecing ourselves together. And there were a lot of vacancies for courses. And I was told that I was to go on a course on the 26th of July at the Middle East Training Center, which was the same, really, as I'd gone on at Helwan in the suburbs of Cairo. The Helwan had been moved to the Middle East Training Center, which was now situated in Gaza. And so I went there with one or two others, and I was told by the commandant, as the others were too, that having been on the course, all we could do was to go on to a higher grade at the brigadier's course. He added, that's no guarantee that you'll get a brigade when you get to when you finished it at the end. Well, there's no need to go right through what happened at the course. Anyhow, there were just four or five rather interesting things. I spent the first week with the weekend with about four others, I think, and at Jerusalem. I went up to Jerusalem and spent it, the Saturday and Sunday there. I was there from the 26th of July to the 15th of August. That's 3 weeks on the course. And we were encouraged to ride every alternate day. They had horses there, and I think those horses were the chargers of the cavalry brigade that first went out to the Middle East at the beginning of the war. There were the Northumberland Yeomanry, the Scots Greys, and one other yeomanry regiment, all went out to the Middle East horsed. And I think these horses were the charges that were left over when the brigade was mechanized. Anyhow, it was a great joy to ride in the early morning before the course began, before breakfast. And it was always very difficult to get a horse past a camel, because the smell of the camel was so awful, the horses absolutely would shy off right away through the fruit groves and the orange groves and the lemon groves to avoid getting going anywhere near the camel. Now, we did the next thing, which was rather interesting. We did tactical exercises without troops between Gaza and Beersheba. And if you kicked the sand and the soil there, you would find the empty cartridge cases from left over from Allenby. Allenby's operation advancing into the Holy Land. On another occasion, we were all doing a toot, and we sat on a whole lot of crates, wooden crates, and the sentry shouted to us, "Get up, get up!" And it's gas. And these were the Middle East supply of gas out in the desert beyond Gaza. Those were the four things that I can remember about that course. However, rumors trickled through to us that there'd been a disastrous attack by a composite battalion formed out of the brigade and under the command of Sammy Battiscombe, and that Sammy Battiscombe had in fact either been killed or wounded or taken prisoner. He had in fact hadn't been wounded or killed. His bullet had hit his belt buckle and knocked him over. That need be he was subsequently taken prisoner. And of course, the grapevine told me by way of an NCO who was also on a course that I was to be the commanding officer. On the 15th of August, I went back to Mariupolis. I got the shock of my life when I walked into the little mess hut. There were 11 officers whose faces were completely new to me. What was left of the battalion was being commanded by Owendom. And I had a meal there. I arrived fairly late in the afternoon, evening, in fact. I had a meal, and I then walked across to see the Brigadier Jos Percy at Brigade Headquarters, and he said what great pleasure it gave him to appoint me as CO, a young Territorial Army officer, to take over the 6th Battalion. And I can tell you, I went to bed a very happy man that night.
You emulated your father.
And I thought, well, I did. I thought, I prayed to the Almighty that I might be allowed to command it for some length of time, and I was indeed allowed to do so. But that was when I was confirmed as a CO, on the 15th of August, 1942.
And what state was the battalion at that time?
What
state was the battalion that you founded?
Pretty low. Pretty low. But I merely had a week to try and restore it, because on the 22nd of August we were on the move again.
Where were you getting your reinforcements from?
From the IBD, the Infantry Base Depot. There were all sorts of regiments they all came from. Duke of Cornwall's Light Infantry they'd come from. And then, of course, there was a whole company at the IBD, formed at the IBD, chiefly of DLI.
And they came to you?
Yes.
And how many of your older, you know, longer-serving officers were with you when you got back?
Well, I can remember going into the mess and seeing Dick Ovenden, who was subsequently killed at Marath. He was an old Somerset Light Infantry officer. And then there was George Wood, who was DLI. Maurice Kirby was DLI. Tomlinson, he'd come to us, and Eardley Wilmot, and there were a few, but there weren't in very many.
And the officers and men coming to you, were they experienced in any way, or were they straight out?
No, some of them were quite young. You know, some of the men were had served before, of course. They weren't new recruits. No.
What about equipment then? Was equipment?
Oh, they gradually all came back. Because now on the 20th, I took command on the 15th of August. And really, I had a week to restore things or try and get things pieced together again. And then we were sent again down the Cairo Road for 10 kilometres, Alexandra Cairo Road, to look after landing grounds 97, 98 and 99. And because there was a flap on that there were a vast number of German parachutists going to be dropped on these landing grounds. Well, there we spent some, I suppose about a fortnight or so before we started to move into the Alamein line. But it was pandemonium down at that aerodrome, those aerodromes. There were all sorts of regiments and sort of ad hoc collected together, and if you drove onto the aerodrome, you got the wrath of the Royal Air Force onto the landing grounds in a vehicle. You got the wrath of the Royal Air Force in no uncertain terms. I remember one night we did an exercise with the Poona Horse, of all things, very famous regiment in its armored cars. And they drove right down the landing ground in their vehicles. And there was absolute chaos reigning in the Royal Air Force. And so you couldn't really organize any form of anti-parachute regiment, because you could never go, if you wanted to, you had to go all the way around the landing ground to get to the other side. It really was a chaotic state. I used to send a patrol out before first light every morning to see whether, right round the aerodrome, 2,000 yards out, to see whether any...